Welcome to Acamedia, a podcast brought to you by the Society for Cinema and Media Studies. I'm Christine Becker.
And I'm Michael Kackman in South Bend, Indiana.
And we are transatlantic today because we have a third person in our party here. David, want to say hello?
Hi, everybody. David Wibson coming to you from France, Paris, to be exact.
And that's also why we have David on here, in addition to just him being a great producer for our podcast. This segment involved him, and it was because he was in the backyard of an incredible international event that happened this summer.
What was that?
I think it was something that involved like five rings and... Oh, wait, wasn't it the Olympics? Was that it?
I think it was.
So we're going to chat with David a little bit about that experience. Then we've got a segment he put together from interviews he did with journalists on the scene. And then we will close it out by reflecting back on what we learned about journalism from this piece. So we're going to start with you, David, though, and your personal experience of seeing the Olympics in your home country. So what expectations did you have going in, and were they borne out? Were there any surprises? You know, looking back, what did you feel about that experience?
First of all, I really didn't have any expectations. It was all new. I had never been to the Olympics before. And I remember asking you, maybe I could do something. You said, yeah, maybe you could look into, you know, the journalism aspects, if you could find some journalists to interview. And I said, sure, why not? But I didn't really know if I was going to find anybody. You know, how do you go about finding journalists? So that's how it started. And there was a kind of magical aspect I found to it. You know, I use the word serendipity a couple of times because it was surprising that I was able to actually meet journalists and interview them. But I would say part of that also is that I have absolutely no accreditation. I have no experience. I didn't go to journalism school. So it was really off the cuff and totally improvised.
One of the things that I really liked about what I saw of the opening ceremonies, but also of some of the other events and things, was just how dispersed it was. I mean, it wasn't just a conventional sporting event in one or a few small venues. It really felt like it engaged the whole city. So I wonder what that experience was like for you, where there might be events or ceremony kind of elements just all around you.
Well, it was interesting because I was also surprised to learn of all the different venues that there were. In fact, several outside of Paris itself. I discovered that because when I was looking for cheap events and I saw like a low price, then I would discover that it was being held in like, you know, Lille or Lyon, you know, it's like.
Or the South Pacific.
Yeah, you know, Tahiti, you know, the surfing was in Tahiti. Yeah. So that was, you know, new to me. I kind of learned about that. And in fact, on the Olympic journal that I held, there was a picture I put in there where it just shows all the different areas around Paris and the suburbs where Olympic events are being held. So that meant, of course, that I could not go to every single one. So I tried to, you know, move around a bit and get to different places to make it like a different place every day. So that was also interesting for me as a kind of goal.
Well, and what David just alluded to there, he's put together this really incredible, basically a personal diary of his experiences during the Olympics. So there's text to tell you where he was that day and what his experiences were. There's photographs. And so it's a day-by-day kind of snapshot of both the Olympics and the Paralympics, which we should acknowledge as well. And so we're going to link to that in our show notes. You can see his entire lineup. I'm wondering then, going day-to-day in the moment, trying to decide what kinds of things to capture, was it just really sort of an improvised, you know, you're just going to grab what you grab when you see it kind of experience?
Yes, it was totally improvised, but it was also built around what I could afford because I had not planned to go to the Olympics. So everything happened at the last minute. And because of that, when I went to the website to buy tickets, it was very close to the beginning and everything was very expensive. I had some neighbors who went every day and they had reasonably priced tickets because they had bought their tickets a year, I think maybe even 2 years. I mean, I know, just way, way in advance. So I went there and I looked and, for example, the opening ceremony was like 1,600 euros. Mm. So that kind of, you know, said, okay, well, maybe that's not an event that I'll go to. You know, I didn't have enough money for that. So I chose two events that were reasonably priced, which tended to be female sports. Mm. And so that's what I did for the Olympics, and the same for the Paralympics. I chose two events to go to. So that aspect was already organized ahead of time, like a few days ahead of time. And other than that, you know, it was just, okay, let's see what I can get to. Let's see what I can find. And that's how I did it.
So the segment we're going to play for you all is focused on journalists, because we wanted to give you kind of a nice, tight, focused segment on that. And that was originally going, you know, in what David was intending to do. But there are other recordings you have, and those are linked to in your journal. So if anyone wants to hear this other, you know, these other materials, you can hear it as well. But I was most intrigued by, you mentioned the opening ceremony. And so one of the kind of flashpoint images was Marie Antoinette. So standing there holding her head, you got to talk to the woman who played Marie Antoinette. And that was so amazing when you were sharing this stuff with me and that one came through. I was like, oh my God, you talked to that actress. And so what was it like having those kind of serendipitous experiences?
Well, you know, as I mentioned in my journal, I just discovered this looking at my Facebook feed. It was a friend of mine who was talking about her experience as Marie Antoinette.
Wow.
And she shared pictures, and I just couldn't believe it. I said, oh my God, you know, I didn't realize. And I contacted her. She answered immediately. And the next thing I knew, we were both at a cafe, and she was giving me an interview and talking about behind the scenes and the preparation for that. And maybe I could also set up the first interview with the first journalist that I met, mm-hmm. who is this guy from Canada, which was also totally unplanned. I was at a kind of Best Buy type store. I needed to pick up a computer for one of my children, and I was waiting for the salesman. And I just noticed this guy who had one of those little accreditation cards around his neck, and it said that he was a journalist. And so I just went up to him and I said, excuse me, sir, could I interview you when you're finished? And he said, sure. And that was how I got this interview. So, I mean, I was like, okay. So that kind of like set the tone for, this was like a couple of days before the beginning of the Olympics. So that's what happened. That's how I got my first interview.
The Acamedia name opened some doors. I'm sure
that's
that
right.
was a big
I'm
part
sure
of it. He was like, oh, wow, yeah, Acamedia. I love that podcast. Sure, let's go.
And one thing I can mention about that, one of the things that I did was I took my cell phone, I put it on the website of Acamedia, the episode that I did on Frederick Wiseman, where there's a picture of me. And I would have that on my cell phone, and then I would like flash it to people. It was a way of saying, like, you know, because I have nothing around my neck, you know, to say that, you know, saying, look, I actually do something,
nice.
You know, I'm not just
the digital credential.
Right? Yeah.
You know, you are our secret weapon. We can send you anywhere. This is good.
David Lipson, roving correspondent.
That's right. That's right.
All right. Well, let's give a listen to what you put together here. And so just a heads up for folks, we've got interviews with six different journalists, and then we have placed as interstitial material wild noise. So while David was walking around or sitting in a venue, he just recorded the wild sound. And so I find that also really fun and exciting to hear the noise of crowds, to hear the atmosphere. And so we thought that would be kind of a fun addition. So everything is interlaced with wild sound. Any thoughts about that, David, recording the wild sound on the scene?
Well, I thought it was a fun experience because, again, it was like I'm impersonating a journalist, and now I'm getting to experiment as a podcaster and sound man and looking for different types of sound. And I just love the fact that you got that, that you kept the woman singing instructions in different languages, that I thought was so funny.
Yeah. And also there's a video of that. And if we were one of those podcasts that simulcasts on YouTube, it'd be really fun to look at that because it was really delightful to see that woman singing and then people around her really delighted by the idea of these instructions in different languages. So I don't know if you linked to the video in your...
Yeah, I was just going to... On the Olympic Journal, you have text from each day. Then there's pictures. And then there are audio links and video links. So the video of that woman is on the journal.
Excellent.
Okay, great. It's worth taking a look at. All right, so let's give this a listen.
Yeah.
Hi, this is David Lipson for Acamedia. I'm here talking with a Mexican journalist. Perhaps you can introduce yourself. What's your name?
Hi, my name is Stephanie Fuentes. I work for Imagen Televisión, channel number 3, national TV station in Mexico.
Okay. So one of the things I noticed is that you had to basically stand for about 2 hours just waiting. Is that the typical working day for you?
Yeah, the typical working day is standing for about 2 hours and walking around. Like the last few days, we've been walking, in according to my tracking device, like 13, 14 kilometers daily.
Oh my God.
Oh. Yeah.
Did you have like some kind of special exercises or something to keep in shape for this?
I mean, not really, but before we came to the Olympics, my daily routine was going to the gym a couple of hours, and because I enjoyed, not because I was really preparing for it, but yeah, I mean, you have to be in good shape, otherwise you're not going to get it.
Okay, great. Now, perhaps you can tell me a little bit about how you came to work on this assignment for the Olympics.
I mean, I've been in media for around 20 years now. These are my second Olympic Games. I went to Tokyo a couple of years ago, and the channel decided to go like the same way and the same teams working this Olympics. So here I am.
So perhaps I want to get into like an important question about Mexican media. What would you say is typical of Mexican media?
I mean, Mexican media, it's sports media in particular, it's pretty fond of football. We are a country that loves soccer. We really treasure it. We didn't have the chance these Olympic Games to be here playing soccer, and in not even the girls or the boys team, but that's something that we really like. I mean, we like to point out the achievements of our athletes, but also we are pretty brutal when it comes to judging and pointing the fails of the teams or the athletes.
Now maybe just could you say a few words about how you see the future of media in Mexico and in general?
I mean, everything's changing for us in television. We don't have to do just television anymore. We have to do social media apps like Instagram, TikTok, and everything's moving that way. The information, it's faster and faster every day. So you have to be quite on time. You have to be very punctual about what you post on social media, because the information is right here, right now. It's not for tomorrow. It's not for a couple of hours. No, you have to be pretty fast. So that's what we're heading for.
Is this a good or bad or indifferent?
I mean, I don't know. It depends on the ethic and I guess the way everyone works in particular. For some people, information, it's not that serious if you don't work it like slow, step by step, confirming your sources and everything. When everything has to be so fast, so last minute, like right now, you lose a little bit of maybe the chance to corroborate every data. And that's where there are a lot of fake news out there, you know?
Right, so this is kind of the aspect of maybe integrity.
Yeah, values, ethics.
Exactly, I see. All right, well, I'd like to thank you so much speaking and being so welcoming and so candid in your answers. And I guess the last thing I would say is go Mexico.
Thank you. I mean, we hope.
I'm Oliver Walters, I'm a videographer from Toronto, Canada, working the Olympics for the CBC, which is the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation.
How is it that you arrived here in Paris?
Well, I'm fortunate enough that this is my fourth Olympic Games that I'll be attending and working at. I have I've done previous games in China and in Japan. I've done a lot of multiple sport events in Chile and in the UK and across USA and Canada. My background is a news journalist, a news videographer, but I also work in sports.
How is it that you were selected? Like, did they say, okay, we have this Olympic team in place, or did you have to ask for it?
Well, that was a long road. It's been a long process. I worked in let me back. CBC is a Crown Corporation, so okay. We are a national broadcaster. But I worked in private media before, for a good 15 years of my career. One of the reasons why I wanted to work for the CBC was to be involved in the Olympic coverage. And once I did get a job at CBC, it still took, I'd say, 12 years of politicking, meeting the right people, and finally getting a shot to get on the Olympic roster. One thing is, because we are the national broadcaster, one thing that was a stumbling block for me was I didn't have, was my French. My French was not very good. So first stumbling block was, okay, we need bilingual crews first and foremost. So that was kind of one of the stumbling blocks that stood in my way for a little while. But eventually I got called up through the back door to the Paralympic team and then eventually to the Olympic team.
You mentioned, I get the impression that if you had to politic a little bit, it's because it's very prestigious to cover the Olympics?
It is a very prestigious event. It is an honor to be at the Games, to cover this for your home country. The stories that come out of the Olympics and the Paralympic Games are incredible. So yeah, it is quite an honor to be chosen to be here at the Games. You know, as a kid, having the Olympic dream, as you know, I am Canadian of Jamaican descent, so track and field was my background. And being from the Caribbean, we love track, we love sprints. We have a history of doing well. So I always aspire to be an Olympian athlete.
I'm thinking about like Donovan Bailey all of a sudden.
Yes, you know? Donovan Bailey. You even think about
another Jamaican,
right? You'll think. Ben Johnson, who was our disgraced Canadian Jamaican athlete, but we have a long history of sort of Jamaican Canadian sprinters, and then you know obviously Usain Bolt. So there is that history and that connection there. But you know, I said growing up wanting to be an athlete and going always wanting to go to the Olympics and be an athlete, that didn't work. But
you're covering the Olympics, so
right? You know, I found another way to get here.
That's right. You got in. It was at a back door.
Right.
All right. So. The media, direction of the media currently is something that you're a bit wary about. Maybe you could talk a bit about that. Where do you see the media going and what do you think about its evolution?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. And well, let's see. As I mentioned to you before, I've been in the industry 30 plus years. And when I started in the industry, there was a slew of newspapers, as you recall. People read daily newspapers. People were home to watch the 6 o'clock newscast or the evening newscast. Well, you know, since then, and the evolution of social media, and people consume content whenever they want. They no longer want to wait for a 6 o'clock newscast, they want it immediately. And we can provide that. I'm glad we've evolved for breaking news and to be able to tell those stories immediately. But because of that immediacy, there's no one, it's hard to fact check your stories or who's fact checking your stories, right?
Right.
And then also with the way the media has evolved, it's you as an independent person could put out your own newscast, and there's no one to fact check your material. You could, you know, pretty much as you've seen in certain media outlets, you could just. Create your own content, and no one is fact checking. You don't have any. There's so I see it's the erosion of journalistic standards that has really disappointed me in the last. What's in the evolution is just I don't think the journalistic standards are there of actually investigating a story, researching, fact checking, telling the truth, right?
Right.
And not so I worry about the future in that way. Exactly. That's why I got into the industry, right? To be the guardian of the truth, right? Mm-hmm. To investigate stories, to tell the truth, to enlighten our community, right? And I feel that is eroding. I mean, you know, talking to younger people, like, they don't really follow what's going on in their own community. And it's sad because on a really micro level, that's where journalism has its most powerful impact, is in informing your community, your local community. Mm-hmm. And when you don't have like a local newspaper or a local newscast to really find out what's happening within your community, that you could, where you can really affect change on a micro level, that's really sad and disappointing. Yeah.
So maybe the last question I would ask you is, can you tell me something that's specific about Canadian media?
Underfunded.
Okay.
Deteriorating, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. Like I said, we don't have any newspapers anymore. I'm really torn because I teach as well, and it's hard to motivate or to inspire the next generation of young journalists coming up to carry the torch to continue this work. I mean, part of me is like, okay, listen, we teach the kids how to create good content, right? So make sure their content, the audio and the video, and is aesthetically pleasing, and that they can also be creative, have creative control to do media and approach it in different ways, in different avenues, right? And that's great. But I worry about the journalistic principles and standards, if they will still uphold the pillars of journalism. That's what I worry about.
Go, 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 go!
Yes, my name is Didier Favori, and I work for the French television for wrestling, Olympic and wrestling.
What do you see in the future of media, in sports media?
Je pense que les médias évoluent en permanence. La manière, la façon de filmer, la façon de développer et d'aider à ce que les sports puissent trouver des systèmes de compétition qui permettent de la rendre populaire. C'est-à-dire qu'il y a une recherche permanente pour que chaque sport puisse trouver son public. Et les médias y contribuent beaucoup par la technologie, par la façon de filmer, par rendre ça tout à fait ludique. Et les médias auront toujours une importance, mais les médias, il faut les fédérations internationales doivent travailler avec les médias pour pouvoir construire quelque chose de nouveau pour le futur.
Okay, so to synthesize what Didier said was basically that media is always evolving, but they have to keep up with the changes in technology, and that they have to work with the federation to go towards these new technological innovations and other innovations in terms of the way sports are being covered. So, can you tell me something specific about French media? What is particular about French media?
En français, dis-moi exactement. En français.
Pourriez-vous nous dire quelque chose qui est spécifique, qui marque les médias français? Qu'est-ce qui peut-être un peu qui les distingue, les médias français, par rapport à d'autres médias, d'autres pays?
Ils sont toujours en recherche. C'est comme, en fait, les médias, ils sont toujours en recherche de choses nouvelles. La France, la cérémonie d'ouverture. Mm-hmm. La France, elle a dit, c'est fini, on ne rentre pas dans le stade, on va faire quelque chose multiculturel. Mm-hmm. On est un pays de liberté, mm-hmm. on est un pays d'idées, on est un pays où on tente beaucoup de choses, on est un pays de révolution. Mm-hmm. Donc, des pays de révolution osent faire les choses. Et quitte à ce que, des fois, cela ne plaise pas, mais on fait évoluer. Et les médias, c'est pareil. Ils sont toujours en train de rechercher comment nous pouvons faire plus et mieux.
Okay, so to synthesize again what he said, he said basically that French are a revolutionary people, and media is also revolutionary, and that the French media is revolutionary itself, and that they're always daring, looking to do something new. And the example he gave was the Olympic ceremony, which was, you know, maybe it didn't please everybody, but it was new, it was innovative, it was daring, and we could say maybe revolutionary. Okay, so thank you so much, Didier, for your time. Thank you so much. So I'm inside the Slovenian house. I'm here with a person who is, you said your job is to do what?
I'm the head of protocol and communication in the Slovenian house here in Paris.
Okay, and what is your name?
Marta.
Okay, so what are your responsibilities as a head of this house here?
We have many events here. So this is, we call it the heart of Slovenia in the middle of Paris during the Olympics. So it is the house divided into two parts. One is the outside part, the terrace, where everybody is welcome, and it
right.
is a free entrance. And this part here is by invitation only. And here we make receptions for our sportists who are coming here to meet their family, to meet us. Or yesterday, unfortunately, our volleyball team lost, but they came here with their families. We had very good three main events. The first has been, which are connected somehow to the top priorities of the International Olympic Committee. So we had a roundtable on gender equality in sport, then sustainability in sport, and yesterday about the second career of the top athletes, meaning how do the top athletes live after they quit the job. And I'm so happy because we had Goran Dragic. He's a famous Slovenian basketball player playing in the NBA league in the US for more than 15 years. Tina Maze, the best skier ever. We had judoka Urška Žolnir. So I think we, and then this hall here was full. And of course we are offering then Slovenian food, Slovenian wines, Slovenian beer, so it's a kind of hospitality part where we love to meet our friends or people who love sports.
So how did you get this position? Like, is this something that you've done before?
Or? Yes, it took us nearly 2 years to arrange everything. So I'm happy that we started early because I think that our position is really excellent here, especially with the outer part where you have seen we had a breakdance.
Right.
Demonstration or let's say competition between Slovenia right. and France. We have different concerts. We will have a Slovenian Culture Day on in 2 days, so we want to introduce our culture. So it's really a house where we want to introduce our country with 2 million people, but a big heart and many, many opportunities what to do.
Okay, now let me ask you a question because this is our listeners are interested in media. Can you tell me a bit about Slovenian media?
Yeah, we are very happy, you know, that the part of the terrace or outer part is the national radio, and they have their studio here, so they are doing their program from here in Paris. They are the most heard radio in Slovenia. We have a strong public radio and television, and many private. This is from the biggest private television in Slovenia, the interview mm-hmm. we
right.
See now with a break,
right.
Break dancer. Some of the newspapers today have difficulties, as I think anywhere in the world, unluckily, but in these times of huge development of social media, influencers, it's, I think, you know, I'm a journalist too. I studied journalism. I started career as a sport journalist. that it has become more and more difficult to deliver really good program and news.
What would you say is the future of media?
What is discouraging me is that the line what is the truth and what is not the truth has been completely erased. And for being informed to be a really good part of the society, you have to get good information. So where do we get the information? And how do we educate our younger generations to do this? Or, you know, how to deal with the young generation that they will not just look into Instagram or TikTok or any other social media to get information, but that they would take a book and read. So this is what is concerning me.
Mexican journalist for the channel Once. So what is your name, sir?
My name is David Ramirez.
Okay, and you?
My name is Gilberto Molina.
Okay, very good. So perhaps you can tell me why exactly you are here, because I noticed you've got a camera and you're filming the Sen, but you're not next to where the Olympics are.
We're working here around the Olympics to take care how people celebrate the Olympics.
So they said that you're here to get sort of the atmosphere, the general atmosphere.
Yes.
And maybe you can tell me a little bit about yourself. How long have you been working for Once Media?
I've been working for 6 years. It's hard, but it's good, you know, because you do something you like.
Right. So this is something that you enjoy doing.
I enjoy doing this. You can see right now here in the Olympics, good because you know new places, you know, you are 11 hours from your country, uh-huh. And you come into Paris, and it's good, and it's I enjoy that.
And how do you and your fellow reporter feel about the fact that you're not actually covering the Olympics, but you're doing the atmosphere? Are you disappointed, or are you
right here?
Yeah, because you're not doing the Olympics themselves.
Yeah, no, I enjoy. I'm not disappointed, because we are here with looking how people celebrate. You know, like today, Mexico wins one medal.
In what event?
I don't know. Say how you say that.
Oh, archery.
Yes. Then win a medal today. We go to find Mexico, Mexicanos.
Right.
And then celebrate the medal today.
Right, so you put that on the news maybe?
Yes. How people celebrate and how it's going around the Paris.
Right. I think you meant the atmosphere about the celebration, around the celebration.
Yes.
Let me ask you a question about the fact that you are filming somebody and you're behind the camera. Is this something that you prefer, or at one point would you like to be in front of the camera?
I would like prefer behind the camera.
Because?
Yes, because it's, you see the, take it like a picture, see the color, see the expressions of the people.
Right,
you know?
Right.
You know? Like I see that and I like to film.
Right,
you know?
So tell the listeners what you are looking at right now.
I'm looking right now, the flame?
Yes, Olympic? This is the Olympic flame.
The Olympic
flame. In the hot air balloon.
Yes, in the hot balloon.
Over the sun. Yeah.
Yes, and I see, right now I see a beautiful place, you know, the river to the Olympic flame.
Yeah.
You take a postal picture from here.
Yes, it's a beautiful image. Anything else that you like to say about Mexican media, about your job? Like maybe you could tell us a bit about how you see the future of media.
It's kind of the sad, you know, because the telephones.
Yes.
Right now, trying to take our jobs.
Oh, yes.
You know?
I will mention, just to interrupt you a second, I'm recording with a telephone. So go on, what were you saying?
As I say, it's kind of sad.
Yeah. You know?
Because too many people trying to be a reporter or trying to be a camerographer.
Yeah.
But it's not like that, you know?
Yeah.
And then think and then they can rewind with the cell phone.
Yes.
You know? And then trying to take your jobs, you know? Because you know, you know, can do with a cell phone like you do them with your camera.
Yeah, so the camera is better than the cell phone?
Yes.
Still,
yes,
you
because
believe?
Because you had to see the, you had to see the colors, you had to see the, you know, you can come in with your cell phone and, you know.
Right, so the, it's you still have an advantage, a technical advantage, having a camera.
Yes.
Yeah, I did mention for the listeners that I'm using my cell phone, so I'm perhaps one of these infamous upstart reporters who are trying to take away your job. Of course, I promise I
no, 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 no. You are a reporter. You write, you know? You do notes.
But this is going to become a podcast, actually.
Yeah, but okay. Okay. Yes.
So I am here in the Media Village, which is very far in the northern suburbs of Paris, and I'm sitting with a journalist from Latvia. So maybe you can introduce yourself. What's your name?
Yeah, hi. My name is Lothar Zerinč. I'm from Latvia. This is like my first Olympic Games. Yeah, soon will be 28 years old. Yeah, and just enjoying the last few hours, I would say, here in Paris.
Okay, so maybe you can tell us a little bit about your experience in covering. Is this the first time you've covered the Olympics?
Yeah, yeah. Actually, it's my first time. I have been in some previous other events, like World Hockey Championship, some places like for Czech Republic, making some stories about Latvian hockey players, because the main sport for me is actually ice hockey, and this is like different area for me. But I think for journalists, you should be like, you have to like see the big picture, not only it, especially if I'm working for that small country for Latvia. They're less than 2 million population, so there should be like lots of work to be done. Yeah.
Because are you from Riga? Is that
from capital city. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. Yeah. So maybe you can tell us about your background. How did you get into journalism? How did you get assigned to this job, covering the Olympics?
Actually, goal to be a journalist was made, I think, before the high school, I think, yeah. I played hockey from, I don't know, for 8 years, right now not so much, but yeah, I was like, I understand at one point that it won't be possible that I could earn money or just live normal life if I play hockey. I wasn't that good. That's the simplest thing. But I wanted to stay at that sport, exactly at ice hockey, and the journalism was one of the ways how to stay in the sport. Those goals and the expectations wasn't that high. But right now that I'm here in Paris, yeah, this is probably the highest point for me as journalist, and the road wasn't that easy. Yeah, at first I started working in regional television, like small city in Latvia. It's called Valmiera, and I was making stories about everything, politics, culture, for sport, not that much. But at one point, I went back to the capital city, to Riga, and yeah, applied for a job for national TV, Latvian television, and then get some experience. I think it's my third year Latvian television, and I wanted to think that my boss see that I'm like developing, growing, and my attitude. I would say it was enough good to send me here. Yeah, and that's, I think, the way how I get here, yeah.
Were you at the opening or the closing ceremony?
Yeah, for the both ceremonies. And I'm very pleased that my colleagues allowed for me as the rookie, I would say, to get for opening ceremony and also for the closing. Yeah, but the opening ceremony was fantastic. I liked it so much. And I think when tomorrow I will be leaving to my home, those memories will stay in my mind, yeah, forever.
Maybe you can tell me a bit about what's the future for you. For example, you're going to go back to Latvia, and what you're going to do?
Yeah, I'm actually working for not also from television, but also for Latvian radio. Those are like, I think, in journalism you don't have in Latvia work just in one place. You should work lots of places where you can for living to get. I wouldn't say the money is the main point, but just for the growth also, because I have to like thank also for the radio that I was practicing my voice, the timbre, because it was very bad actually some years ago, but there are some room for improvement, but yeah, there were lots of practices. Yeah, I'm gonna just work for Latvian radio, also from Latvian television, and hope that maybe I'm gonna there's in future I will get also to Olympics, maybe for Winter Olympics in Italy, and for the LA, yeah, that was
right.
Yeah, LA, I think that's the place where everyone like every journalist wants to get.
So radio, is this public radio or private?
No, it's public. Okay. It's this year, I think they're gonna get to, together Latvian television, Latvian radio, because right now they are separate organizations, but at the end of this year they're gonna be like one whole organization. But yeah, just making news, reading those news. The hardest part maybe is that I have to get up early at 5 o'clock in the morning, but it's not every day. I have also very good colleagues in the Latvian radio, so mm-hmm. I'm very pleased for this job. That I think the main point was I had some expectations. I think when I was making that goal to be a journalist, I thought, okay, I want to be someday in Olympics, and right now it's happening.
And can you tell our listeners something specific about Latvian media? Do you say that makes it different than other media?
You, as the journalist, you're not only making stories, asking questions, you're also the guy who takes the tripod for cameraman. As I see, there are some, I think from China, there is like from one cameraman, there's two assistants. But here we are like two guys, me and my colleague, cameraman, who is like recording everything. Also, I should like edit the videos. Like you have to be from the start when you're in the morning when you wake up, and till the end of the day when you're going to sleep. That's the, you're doing everything that the story gets to the audience. So yeah, I think that's the main point, that we have to be good to do lots of jobs. Yeah,
Kind of do it yourself, jack of all trades,
yeah,
in terms of operating everything.
Yeah, everything. You're doing everything, not as the big countries, because yeah, there was so lots of work to be done here, and the time flies so fast. And yeah, we are still here right now, and I want to say that as a journalist, the most privileged thing is that you can enjoy other cultures, you can go to other places, other cities, countries, and I think that's one of the cherries on the top of the cake.
So maybe last question, what do you think about media at the moment and the future of media?
Oh, I think the media is changing. Yeah, I think the AI won't get
our job 100%, but but it's one of the tools how you can develop the stories and the storytelling. Every person who wants to be a journalist or is a journalist, I think they're doing their job great. As I saw these 2 weeks here in Olympics, there were lots of all the professionals were here, not only athletes the best, and I would say the journalists are the best was here also.
Okay, so kind of like the Olympics for journalism.
Yeah, media Olympics, yeah.
Okay, all right. On that note, I will, as a totally impartial observer, I will give you a gold medal for journalism.
Okay,
in terms of
you.
How you had to do everything by yourself.
Yeah.
And thank you so much for your time.
Yeah, thank you.
All right. Well, that was a really interesting listen, really fun sounds and ideas and really profound ideas about the state of journalism and the role of individual journalists today. Any initial reflections, David, on that experience of what you learned from talking with all these journalists?
Well, what I think was interesting is that when you listen, you hear a lot of the same things coming back from each journalist about, you know, the threats to their profession. One of which is people like me using their cell phone to make podcasts and recordings and taking pictures and videos, but also disinformation. I'm not sure if we should mention that this is before the election, but you know, the word disinformation, you know, misinformation reminded me of that.
Mm-hmm.
And that this is a threat that we have to deal with more and more, and that journalists are there as a safeguard against that.
Yeah.
So I think that's really important. And then they all talked about how that it's important. And another thing that stood out for me was the guy from Latvia talking about how he had to do everything all by himself. Well, he had like another person helping him, but basically it was kind of like a do-it-yourself operation. So on the one hand, on the one extreme, you've got that. On the other extreme, you had the sort of like the BBC journalist who had these people helping her, and who is not on the podcast because she wasn't allowed to talk with me.
Oh, really?
I mean, she was willing to do it, but there was like this assistant that came up and said, oh, I'm sorry, but the hierarchy says that we're not allowed to do that. And I was like, okay.
It is, you know, the kind of perspective that I think a lot of academics might bring to this is that they'd be really excited about the possibility of a kind of citizen journalism. But of course, that's exactly the kind of system that generates a lot of noise and a lot of potentially misinformation or disinformation. And it's also impossible not to notice, as you did, that the time-saving and labor-saving benefits of these inexpensive mobile technologies mostly accrue to the publishers, to the networks, to the studios, and less to the actual journalists who then just have more work to do because they can operate their own equipment and that kind of thing.
Exactly. And in fact, I noticed that whether it was the do-it-yourself Latvian journalist or the BBC journalist, they all had special apps on their cell phones and things that they were connecting up. You know, it wasn't the big, huge shoulder camera from the past. Everything was portable.
Right.
You know, that you could just put away in your pocket or whatever. One other thing also I wanted to mention was that in terms of the media, there was the people that I met who were focused on the homeless problem, and they pointed out the fact that there were no journalists covering that aspect.
Oh, really?
I kind of asked them about that, and they said, well, there's like one person who came, but there are not a lot of people that came.
I want to actually play a little clip of that because we didn't work it into the piece because it was just focused on the journalist speaking. But I think it's a nice point to drop in a clip of your conversation. So just real quick, set up who you're talking with here, David.
So the woman's name is Fanny. She was the person who I basically started talking with these people. You know, I was at the central place, which is called Place de la Bastille, which is where, if any of you know, like French history, like Bastille Day is based on this kind of storming the Bastille. And they had set up the Olympic rings in that area. And as I was walking through, I noticed a sign that said, France is the Olympic champion of the homeless in French. And so I was intrigued, and so I went and I talked to the people there, and it was an association that they were trying to drum up interest in the homeless problem. And of course, this was exacerbated by the Olympics because they had been moved out of certain areas because of the Olympics. And I asked around and I said, well, is there somebody that I can talk to who is in charge of this? And they pointed me towards this lady. And so her name is Fanny. And so I spoke to her. Well, she doesn't speak English. So I spoke to her in French, and then I kind of like translated while I was doing it.
Nice. Yeah, let's listen to a little bit of that.
So I asked her about whether there was a deliberate intent to do this during the Olympic Games. She said yes. And she said that it's a way to make people aware and raise public awareness of this problem, because the world is sort of looking at Paris at the moment. And that she also mentioned that so much money was given to clear out homeless people, to create housing for athletes, people coming for the Games. And so she doesn't see why that this good faith can't be used to help solve some of these problems of the homeless. Est-ce que, dans votre avis, ça porte des fruits, cette campagne? Il y a des répercussions?
Alors, là, c'est très dur d'exister pendant les JO. Là, c'est vraiment très dur de faire monter la cause du logement, parce que, contrairement à certains pays qui ont créé quand même des mouvements anti-JO assez fort pour dénoncer quand même toute la gentrification dans certains quartiers comme à Londres, Vancouver et tout ça qu'il y a pu avoir, et l'après-JO. En France, il n'y a pas eu de... Les gens, ils sont pas pour, mais ils sont pas rentrés dans la confrontation, en fait. Donc du coup, le fait d'aussi ne pas avoir ces mouvements-là aussi en France, fait qu'en ce moment, c'est vrai que... Puis je pense que les ordres sont donnés aussi à la presse, qui est quand même, détenu par nos gros milliardaires, Bernard Arnault et tout ça, pour ne pas montrer pendant les JO ce qui se passe derrière. C'est-à-dire que malgré tout ce qu'ils peuvent dire, il y a encore beaucoup de gens qui sont dehors.
Ok, so she said that it's really very difficult to break through, that the Olympic Games is taking up all the media space, that the media is in the hands of rich people like Bernard Arnault, and that it's really difficult to get any attention towards their cause.
And she was so happy to talk with me. And she said also that she was worried that when she talked to the media, they would pick and choose what she was saying. And she said she felt confident that I was going to be more faithful to what she was saying.
Because you're not part of a media establishment that has a...
An agenda.
An agenda, yeah. And is part of a kind of touristic... voyeuristic view of the city rather than the more street level experience of being there and living there.
And that also comes across in each of the interviews when you asked about how they got there and does it take a while, and everybody wants to do the Olympics, and so there's this sort of like winding road often to get chosen for it. And so when you get there, it is this glorious thing, and the notion of journalism being like trying to bring truth to power or fight for the person who doesn't have a voice, that probably does get almost instinctually set aside because you're like, oh my god, the Olympics, this is amazing, and my country is doing great and we got a medal, or we didn't get one but that's okay because they tried really hard, or the Paralympics as well. Like, it just becomes this sort of glossed over experience. Right. And so, as we know, all of the really dark and horrible things about the Olympics and the way it does especially abuse the marginalized, that gets shoved aside. And this is not to blame journalists by any means, but just I can understand, you're finally there, you get swept up in it, and you don't want to even, you're not even inclined to point your camera towards those things, even if you had a corporate overlord who would be inclined toward that.
Yeah.
The overwhelming power of those narratives that shape not just the commercially packaged versions of the coverage, but also just the ways that we understand it ourselves as bystanders and as temporary imposters like David.
Any final thoughts, David, on your experience, takeaways you have, or takeaways you hope our listeners would have?
It's sort of like, I'm not sure if I could make this comparison, but it reminds me of when I was in a theater class and you experiment being blindfolded. It's like you go through an experience and it stays with you and it gives you a new perspective on a lot of things. So, sort of like I was a journalist for 2 weeks and what did I learn? And I think it gave me a new experience about what it's like, the difficulties, you know, like when I was standing for almost 2 hours with the Mexican journalists because they had to keep redoing what they were doing. You know, they weren't in the opening ceremony, they were outside. And the fact that one, like the French journalist told me that even though he had accreditation, he still was being kept at bay. So, you know, you have some power, but it's limited. And then also the fact that they were talking about all these things that they're worried about, you know, that they feel threatened by, and the changing evolution of the profession. So it for me, it was that kind of humbling experience. And also, you know, a couple of bad experiences that I didn't really, I kind of alluded to, but, you know, where I'm being looked on as kind of in a bad way by people in restaurants or because they're worried that I'm bothering their clientele. So again, you know, this kind of like the journalist experience, like the Mexicans who told me that sometimes it's dangerous because they have to go to like certain areas where there are cartels and you know, so, I mean, it's all the aspects of being a journalist that involves.
Well, so maybe we won't make you a roving journalist. It sounds like you're happy with your 2 weeks and you're ready to just get back to being just an old podcaster.
It depends, you know, we'll see. You know?
If the right event comes up.
Yeah. Right. That's right. We'll leave it open.
Okay, that's a good plan.
Well, thank you so much for doing all this work to set up all these interviews and conduct them, but also for stepping into that role for a little while so that we can experience your experience of being an imposter.
Well, thank you for giving me the opportunity. Thanks for the idea. And thanks both of you for doing such a great job on hosting the show.
Well, it was special for us, too. We don't usually get to do segments like this. So, you know, I edited the segment. It was just really fun to put together all those pieces, and especially because it's just sort of different stuff. And we hope our listeners have enjoyed a different sonic experience than usual as well.
All right. I hope you've enjoyed this special roving reporter episode of Acamedia. Our work would not be possible without the support of the Society for Cinema and Media Studies and the University of Notre Dame.
And we'd like to thank our producers, Stephanie Brown at Washington College, Jonathan Nichols-Pethick at DePauw, Frank Mondelli at University of Delaware, and of course, David Lipson from the University of Strasbourg. Thanks so much for your work here, David.
And it's all brought together under the watchful ears and mind of Todd Thompson at the University of Texas at Austin, who takes care of our mixing and audio. All right. Until next time, we'll see you in winter. I've always wanted to be a French horn.